Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Halloween, everybody. I hope you don't have a toothache just yet and that you're getting ready to take the kids or the friends trick-or-treating or whatever fun things you're up to on this beautiful Monday. Today, we are doing, per the usual, the last Monday of every month. We are doing what we call Mock Interview Monday. And one of my favorite guest hosts is in studio with us today, Allison. Allison, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and for those of you who haven't heard Allison before, she is just a genius. She's going to be actually guest hosting the show for me at the end of the month when I'm traveling the last two shows of the month, so definitely tune in and check them out. Allison Garrido is passionate about helping people find a job that they enjoy. As a career coach, she helps her clients identify their strengths and create a path toward a fulfilling career. She also provides intensive resume review and interview preparation, which is exactly what we're going to be doing today. And Allison has an extensive human resources background. During her time in HR, she coached staff members at all levels around performance reviews and facilitated off-site and in-house trainings. She now facilitates an original workshop series for those making transitions. Allison studied psychology at Northeastern University and is a certified professional coach through the International Coaching Academy. I'm so excited to have you here today. And I'm excited to have with us our special guest, Jean, who is here, and we're going to be conducting a mock interview. And so Allison is going to go ahead and conduct the interview with Jean. And then at the end, we'll spend the last 20 minutes of the show debriefing and giving Jean any feedback on anything that might help her with future interviews. So with that, I turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. And Jean, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so happy that you could come in and interview for this role.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. This was such a great opportunity. I couldn't resist.
Thank you. So why don't you take a moment? I have your resume here, but please tell me a little about yourself. What brought you here today?
Well, when I saw the job that you have available, I just thought it would be a perfect fit with my background. It has the flexibility that I'm looking for, it has the growth potential, and I think I have a lot of skills that I can bring to the table to get your company to the next level.
Wonderful. And tell me about your career up until this point. What has brought you here?
Up until this point, my career has evolved rather organically. It started out with a lot of in-depth research as a paralegal, and then from there I got into more management, and that my management duties grew until it became a natural extension to become a manager in my own right of a firm, and then my duties and responsibilities grew from there until I sit before you now, looking forward to my next opportunity with you.
Wonderful. Tell me, are you working now?
I am. I'm working on a consultancy basis.
Okay, wonderful. And what has made you want to transition to a new role?
I am always transitioning to a new role, whether I'm staying within a company or whether I'm outside of a company. I'm always looking for new ways to grow and new ways to serve and new ways to make my bosses look good.
Wonderful. So tell me, you mentioned that your career has grown organically and you have taken on more responsibilities and moved into a management role. What are some of the favorite things that you like to do in your role?
There's so many things that I like to do in my role, because one of the wonderful things about being an administrator of a company is that you get to do something new and different every day, and you never know what's going to happen. One day it could be that the fish tank catches on fire and you have to figure out how to deal with that. And another day you realize that the counseling that you've had with someone for 6 months has finally taken hold, and this person has finally turned a corner and understands what you're saying. And so those are the most rewarding, especially when you're dealing with people. Those types of things are the most rewarding, when you find that someone has actually found their own rhythm, and they found their own growth, and they're looking forward to working with everyone as a member of the team. And so those are the most rewarding things. But also getting new skills and figuring out how to use those skills, whether it's a pivot table in Excel and learning all the different ways that one can employ that as opposed to buying new software to do certain things, that's always fun. And learning new ways to provide value to the clients, which is basically why I'm there, is to provide more value to clients, which is internal to the people who work inside the company and also external to the people that use the services of our company.
Okay. So have you had roles that were client-facing, or most of your roles been working with internal stakeholders?
Most of it has been with internal stakeholders, but I also have experience with external, both as a paralegal, working with clients with client intake and document discovery and that type of thing, and then as a managerial role, working with clients regarding billing matters and other questions that they may have. It's especially rewarding when a client calls and says, shouldn't this cost be included in your exorbitant hourly rates? and when you look at it, you say, well, when you phrase it that way, maybe you're right. Let's take a look at that. Mm-hmm. And luckily, it's not offensive. It's not something to take personally. If somebody feels that that's the emotion that they're feeling at that time, it's important not to react, and it's important to try to understand where that person is coming from.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you have a lot of understanding and a way to disarm people with humor, right, to help them.
I do, and I do try to use humor as much as I can, and that's a double-edged sword, because sometimes that can be a great weakness if there is a situation that someone considers to be a grave situation and very important. If I make light of it, someone may think that I'm not taking it as seriously as they are, rather than think, this is a challenge, it's a major challenge, and we're all going to get through with it, and we're going to figure out a way to do it. And for me to make fun of it is a way for me to say, it's a challenge, but we're going to get through it. We're going to find a solution. And a lot of times that doesn't translate well. So if you're going to ask me the question about my greatest weakness, I think I've already given you the answer then.
Okay. So what are you doing to make sure that people are receiving that humor in the way with which you intend it?
I try to make clear that I try to restate the problem as they see it, and then come up with some solutions, or at least tell the person when I believe I'll have some idea about the next steps, and ask that person, what do you believe are the next steps? When do you want to go over this? And depending on whether this is a crisis mode, such as if the fish tank is on fire, then there's a little bit less of collaboration on the next step when that happens, as opposed to something that may not be quite so critical when it comes to timing.
Mm-hmm. So just in the few minutes we've been talking, you've really brought in collaboration a lot and working together with people, involving people in processes. Tell me, when you manage people, is that your management style, or what does your management style look like when you have people reporting to you?
Well, management sort of has a bad name, because if somebody's managing something, it means that they're managing all details of the process, and that's particularly not my style. My style is more, this is the goal, tell me how you intend to get there, great. What do you need from me to support you? It's more of, what do you need so I can help you do your job. It's not trying to tell someone how to do his or her job. I don't think that usually goes over very well. So my management style is more of a leadership style. Tell me what you need to do. Tell me this is our goal. And tell me how you want to get there. And tell me the steps and the things and the resources that you need, and let's see what we can do about providing it. And in some cases, the resources are not available, whether it's budget or personnel or time. We don't have those resources. So it may be a little bit of a give and take to refine the process. And then we refine the process. We go ahead and we check in. And that's more of my management style, as opposed to telling everyone the details of how to get a specific task done.
Okay. Sounds like a coaching style of managing a lot.
Yeah, maybe. That's one way to phrase it. I've never heard of that phrase, but I think I'm going to be using that and stealing that from now on. I like it.
Please do. It's all yours.
Thank you.
So can you tell me about a particularly successful experience you had as a manager?
There are quite a few, and some of them I may not know. One of the most heartwarming incidents has to do with one of our personnel who we banged heads a little bit, mm-hmm. a little, and that person went on to work at another firm. And she later called me up after she was working at another firm and asked for help with benefits and insurance. And she said, I really get it now. I get what you were trying to do. And I really appreciate it. And it's really helped me in this job. And right now, can you please help me with my benefits because I'm not getting the level of support in my new firm that I got from you and I didn't appreciate it at the time. And that was a really wonderful, it was really a wonderful conversation. I was really happy that, number one, I could help this person, and number two, that it helped her in her career. Mm-hmm. But I could also help her with her benefit questions.
Yeah, it's you ended up being a great resource for her, it sounds like.
And I think that's the whole point, is that now there's a lot of movement between companies and among industries. And if we can all be resources for one another and stay friends with one another and stay colleagues and stay collegial and be able to use each other's best qualities and build on that so that we can work on ourselves and our skills, I think that's just the best situation possible. Because there will be a lot of movement, mm-hmm. and no one knows where they're going to wind up.
It's true. It's true. What are some of the resources you use to best do your job?
There are a lot of resources, including my professional organization, the ALA. I use that. My local analog of that, which is the Greater Los Angeles ALA, the local chapter. Mm-hmm. I use the professional legal administrators membership in that particular professional organization, and I use a lot of online sources. NALP has a lot of online sources. The records ARMA has a lot of resources on their website. SHRM has a lot of resources, and YouTube. I don't think I'd be able to change a light bulb without YouTube. It's amazing. The podcast. I mean, there are so many online resources that are available. The problem with that is that there seems to be the need for an editorial context for that, because there is a lot of information and it's hard to wade through it. But there is all of that. And then I have my colleagues and other firms that are great resources, and prior bosses, and also looking at some of the benchmarking surveys that are done for the industries. So among all those things, there are a great number of resources. And then there are books. And then there's people like Jen Hill, who we look to people that are leaders in the industry and other industries and related industries to find out what they're reading, what are they doing, what are they thinking about. And those are the type of resources that I tend to focus on, because focusing on resources that I need right now to do my job isn't going to help me. I need to focus on the resources that I need 6 months, a year, 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Tell me, a person that's on your team, a person that's working for you, mm-hmm. what does it take for them to be successful?
It depends on the situation. In some cases, you need superstars. It depends on the project. And part of being a good manager or a leader is to finding the proper people to work on specific projects. So hopefully, if I've done my job properly, the people that are on specific projects and will be the right people to be on those teams. And so their natural proclivities and their natural skills will come out, and they will shine by just the virtue of the type of project that they were chosen to be working on with other people. And in some cases, there are people that do not work well in teams, and those people are given assignments that they can do by themselves. And so basically part of the issue is to find out people's strengths, find out what people like to do, find out what people are willing to do, and then work with them in order to bring out the best in them. So that's basically what it takes for someone to be successful, is basically showing up and be willing to learn and be willing to put themselves out there and make a mistake and be willing to do that, because everyone makes mistakes. That's the way we move everything forward, and basically make the mistake and then we'll correct it and we'll move on. If it's not, and we'll make sure that people won't fail, so that it's not a situation where someone's working on a project and something doesn't work out. Okay, we'll just retool and we'll rethink and we will redo before it becomes an issue. And so the major issue or the major thing that would be important is just communication. Where are you? What are we doing? You didn't have time to work on it? That's fine. When do you think you will be able to do it? Let's refine our due date. Let's refine our schedule. Let's refine that. That's all fine. Just communicate with me. I think the only way that someone could fail is if they don't communicate. Even if someone says, I don't want to do this project anymore, it's making me unhappy, fine, we'll do something else. We'll put you on something else. there's no point in making you unhappy. We'll just find something else that you would much rather do, and then come up with a series of other projects, because there's always something to do. There is always there are always other things to do. There are always things to do.
Mm-hmm. Great. So while you mentioned there's room for growth and flexibility in this role, we are a smaller firm than you're used to working with. And I have concerns that you might be bored in the role. So you have a lot of experience, and I want to make sure this is the right fit.
And that's a perfectly valid question, of course, because especially as a small firm, you have to make sure that you make the right choice, because it's just so disruptive if you bring somebody in and then there's a turnover. That's just so disruptive. That's especially true in a small firm. And I understand that, because I come from a background where we had a family business, and so I'm very familiar with the concerns of a small business. And accordingly, I'm also familiar with the idea that it's going to take a while for me to learn the flow of how everyone works together, because when you're in a small company, everyone is cross-trained, usually much more than in a big firm. And so there's a lot of institutional knowledge that isn't in any way documented. Mm-hmm. So part of my job, I think, might be to meet with everyone, find out what the institutional knowledge is, find out what everyone's doing, find out what the process is, and then work with everyone to try to find ways and things that will make their jobs better and more productive. And I think that's a big job, whether it's for a big company or whether it's for a five-person company. That's a big job. And when you're working with a small company where most things may not be written down and everyone does things second nature, I think that's something that really needs to be documented, especially if the company wants to continue, and if you want to come up with some type of succession plan, which I'm happy to work on with everyone, so that everyone feels safe and comfortable that this company will continue no matter what, because nothing is guaranteed.
Thank you. So we've talked a lot about your role as a leader and how you work as a leader. Tell me, what is the role you play on a team? What do people depend on you for when they're on a team with you?
Whatever they need. If they need me to bring in coffee and donuts at 5 in the morning, I'm happy to do that. If they need me to listen to their ideas, I'm happy to do that. If they need resources, if they need more people on their team, if they need some type of special software, if they need some type of special equipment, we'll try to find some way to buy it, rent it, or find someone that will loan it out for a particular period of time. So basically, it is, hopefully, I'm someone that they can just come to, I'm someone that they can come to with whatever is choking them at the moment so that they can keep going.
Wonderful. And as we come full circle now, tell me, what would your boss say about you?
I think that my boss would say that I'm very intelligent. And I think my boss would also say that I do care. I do care a lot. And if you and it really depends on the boss that you ask what my qualities are, because all of them need something different. Mm-hmm. And so some will say that I always answer the phone at 3 in the morning, even at 3 in the morning, or I always answer the emails, or I'm responsive, or if they have a problem, I'm sympathetic. But that isn't for all of them, because they all come to me for different things. And so I'm happy to be flexible, because I realize that everyone needs something different. And depending on the time, they may need something different. At some times, the fact that there isn't a rye bagel in the kitchen is a big problem. Mm-hmm. And if the right flavor of tea is not in the break room, that's a big problem, especially if people's emotions are running high because they've been working 24/7 on a long project. That's a big deal, and it needs to be taken seriously. And so depending on who you ask and when you ask it, you're going to get a different response. And I think that is a good indication of my flexibility and my willingness to do whatever it takes for whomever.
Thank you. Tell me, Jean, tell me about your favorite boss.
My favorite boss?
Mm-hmm.
I have so many. It's hard to find one. and some of them were just so funny. And the one I can think about is the questions that he would ask, which were just hilarious. It's, you see this as a negative, or it wasn't I was being told how to feel or to think about something. It was asking leading questions about a project or about a situation. And to me, that was a great way to have me think about how I really felt about the situation, as opposed to being told how I should feel about the situation. So it was that space that I was given that I really appreciated. And I had a number of bosses that were that I really liked working with that did the same.
Okay, and it sounds like that style of leading and mentoring and managing has really rubbed off on you. You've used those tools to influence your own style.
That is absolutely the case. And I am sensitive, however, that some people may not be as comfortable with that and may not be as receptive as I am to that. So in those cases, I am more than willing to change how my style, mm-hmm. so that it better suits the people that are involved.
Okay. Tell me, what is your proudest achievement throughout your career and your professional life?
I don't know if I've gotten it yet, but one of my proudest moments was going to Brazil and speaking on behalf of professional legal managers about what professional legal managers do to a group of attorneys at the Central Bank of Brazil who have no clue what we do. So that was one of the most fun things.
Wonderful. It sounds like fun. I know and love Brazil.
We didn't get to see much of it.
And I
can imagine. From the inside of a conference room, it's pretty amazing how every city looks alike from the inside of a conference room with no windows.
Indeed.
It's sort of interesting.
Indeed, you said it. So what was the process of you being selected or putting yourself forward to be the speaker for this event?
I was one of the three speakers, and there were multiple speakers. A friend said, we have this opportunity. I don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen. And would you be interested? And I was, sign me up, coach. Sure, you tell me when and where, and I will be there. Never knowing that it would materialize, never thinking about it, never worrying about it, but if somebody wants me there, I will be there.
Wonderful. Is speaking something that you really enjoy doing as part of your...
Not at the time, but now I'm getting better at it. At the time, I wasn't really enjoying it. But now I have to admit that I do like doing presentations. I like explaining things. I like when people interrupt me during presentations. I like the question and answer. I like the process. I like the process of presenting ideas and seeing glazed looks among 40 people. And I like the idea of presenting and seeing just a glimmer of aha's out there. Mm-hmm. So it's all a learning experience, and it's all just great fun.
That's great. And how often are you able to do that? How often are you speaking to groups?
It depends. In ALA, there's a lot of opportunities to do that. And it really depends. And it also depends on if I have something that I feel is valuable to be said, and if the audience is of a mindset that this is something or certain topics are pertinent to them at any particular time.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that this talk, and I'm just referencing your resume, mm-hmm. Let me rephrase my question. What is the topic that you would consider yourself a subject matter expert on? Like, if you had to give a talk this afternoon, what's your favorite thing to talk about?
Flexibility.
Okay.
Flexibility is one thing that I think I can speak about. Also, communication and being sensitive to different people in different ways, I think, is another key aspect. Now, if you really want to talk about skills, I have a lot of skills in electronic billing. I have skills in certain software packages. I have a lot of hard skills. But I'm finding that hard skills are really easy to teach. The hard thing that's hard to teach is how to apply it and how to be creative with the application, given your budget and time and the needs that you have. And I'm finding that that's really where I shine in problem solving, in trying to find a solution that may not be something that is off the box or off the shelf, but actually using the resources, the available resources at hand, in order to custom craft a unique solution that will work in a particular situation.
Perfect. Jean, as we wrap up, tell me, what questions do you have for me?
I think one of the biggest questions I would have is, what qualities do you think the ideal candidate should have for this particular, what three qualities are should the ideal candidate have for your position?
Okay, anything else?
What would be the best way for me to earn your trust in the first 90 days?
Okay, are there any other questions?
I think if you would answer those, I think I would be in a good place. I think I'd understand a lot about your culture and a lot about you.
We just drop the mic after that. That's the best way to earn your trust.
I know. Seriously, hashtag best question ever.
That just won the best question of the year award. Mm-hmm. Yes. That was brilliant, Jean. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Yeah. I've never heard that asked in all the years, all the coaching, all the mock interviews I've done. I don't think I've ever heard it put so eloquently and perfectly. Mic drop was that's absolutely spot on. So how did it feel for you, Jean?
Oh, this was a lot of fun. But you have to remember, this is a no-risk situation, and I'm dealing with people that I've known and just mm-hmm. met and that are perfectly reasonable in all ways. And they have no hidden agendas, and there's no politics, and there's none of that those other layer things that always go on in a typical interview. And it's like I was meeting with you, but I have no way of knowing in a typical interview whether you're the first gatekeeper or the third gatekeeper, or how many gatekeepers and how many people you need to please in order to move the process forward.
Mm-hmm. And does that impact how you tell me how that shows itself when those things are happening?
If I know that there's going to be a lot of gatekeepers and a lot of follow-up and a lot of people to meet afterwards, I may not give all the information, because I may just hold back some things because I want there to be something to talk about the next time. Mm-hmm. Because my assumption is that if you're a gatekeeper, you may sit in on the next interviews or you may not, but there's going to be new information that needs to come out. If I divulge everything all at once, then there's nothing new to come out.
Mm-hmm. Allison, can I ask your opinion on that?
Please.
What do you think about that? Do you think that you should tailor your interview if you know it's going to be a 3 or 5-step process, whatever it is? Do you think it is a good idea to withhold information?
I don't know if it's withholding information as much as it's having a lot of stories in your back pocket.
Yeah.
I have this gesture that I do, but when I'm talking to people about interviews, what I'm saying is I want you to have all these stories sitting on shelves, and you just grab the right story.
It's like a bookshelf. It's like a library, and you're like, oh, I'm going to pull this one out, chapter 12 of this book.
Yes, exactly. And so maybe your proudest accomplishment story in one situation is the same as your difficult customer story in a different situation. But if you start to develop that repertoire of stories, then it won't feel like you're saving something or leaving something out, because in that situation, what I worry is that if you didn't pull out the good stuff early on, are you saying, oh shoot, I should have used that, maybe if I'd used that story. But I think if you have a lot of stories you feel really good about, then you have that backup or that bookshelf.
Yeah, and it was interesting. That was going to be one of my points about it. Like, Jean, that was brilliant. I mean, I think there were a lot of things that you said that were great. There was a lot of good cadence and rhythm and a lot of good participation. Obviously, you're very articulate and well-read, and you could tell that by the verbiage that you used. But what was interesting was there were a couple of occasions where on numerous times you would say, you said it depends a lot. A lot of the questions that Allison would ask, you would say, it depends, and it was kind of more vague, where for me, from a recruiting standpoint, to me, it could have been much more impactful had every occasion that she asked you a question, rather than, like, you were very politically correct, like, you were very PC about a lot of the questions, And as the interviewer or as somebody observing the interview, I felt like there was something lacking or something missing, where had that extra story been present, instead of saying it depends or it could be this, it could be that, I wanted concrete examples a little bit more. And there was the one great example that, again, if I were walking away from this interview, it would definitely stand out to me, about the person who came back and said, you know, I now respect you. Like, those sorts of stories, my experience is that's what people are going to remember you for at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. The rest of it was just noise. But the stuff that is the substantive examples, that's what really resonated in my mind. What were your thoughts, Allison?
Absolutely. And I think that you are not a person that needs a lot of direction. But I think that when you say it depends, or I can be whatever you'd like me to be, and when I'm a hiring manager, I worry that I'll have to tell you what I'd like you to be. And so I think that there were opportunities, like Jennifer said, to share the examples. And that way people can have something tangible to say, oh, okay, that's what I need. Like, I need someone who's able to wiggle in that way. But a story allows you to brag and talk about yourself in a way where you're not saying, I'm good at this, but you say, you know, I maybe say, instead of I'm good at this, I enjoy doing this, and this is how it looks. This is, so paint that picture for people. And I'm hesitant to share my acronym because I do it every time, but if someone's
SOAR.
Just...
SOAR. I love SOAR. Go at it again. You never know. If they're tuning in for the first time, tell them about SOAR.
Exactly. If this is the only mock interview Monday that they hear, I want them to have that knowledge. So SOAR is the example I always share, and it's a storytelling methodology that stands for situation, obstacle, action, and result. So you get to really tell people the impact of what you do. Result is usually what most people forget. But having those SOAR stories, those are the stories that I want on the shelf, because it really paints a picture of what you do and who you are when you can tell those stories. And, you know, you see that person on the other end of the phone, right? I had a clear image of that conversation and the relief that woman was feeling when she was saying, you know, I get it now, and I need you, and I appreciate you. That was the most feeling that I felt during the interview, and it was because I had that clear,
that emotional connection. Mm-hmm. Too. And I remember in Landmark Education, there was a great thing that they would teach us called vivid sharing. And if we share that, like, first person, I'm on the phone with her, she's really distressed at the time, you know, we would butt heads on occasion, and to have that same person call me and compliment me and tell me I need your help was the greatest feather in my hat that I could have ever gotten. You mm-hmm. know, that experience, when you share that, it elicits an emotional response. Mm-hmm. And that's something interesting too, because it's funny, you said the word sensitive. That was another interesting thing that came up a lot in the interview, is the word sensitive came up a lot, and care a lot. And the concern I would have as an employer is, we don't even mean to, but from a just subconscious standpoint, when we hear the words, I care a lot, I'm very caring, I'm very sensitive, it almost might have a negative impact on the employer, because as much as we would want our manager to be somebody who's sensitive, like in one case you said, I care a lot about my work, I might change or shift the verbiage to I take a lot of pride in the work I do, as opposed to care a lot, because that could leave the wrong impression. Or instead of using the word sensitive, which I noticed came up about 3 to 5 times at least, instead of using that word sensitive, you could say, I'm very cognizant of how other people might not always have my same views, and how I've handled that is when I've dealt with somebody who is in X or Y situation, as opposed to just stating I'm sensitive numerous times, and then for me, I'm walking away going, well, how sensitive is she?
Mm-hmm. Right. Where's the line?
Yeah. So that was just one thing that had come to my mind. And the other interesting thing that I noticed about Eugene, and especially it came up in the big versus small firm question that Allison asked you, is how big picture you think. Is a lot of your questions were very top level down. And what was interesting is, if I were a small firm interviewing you and you were talking about industrialized knowledge, you lost me at that, because I'm almost seeing that as more of like a knowledge manager, an executive director, that sort of person, which there's no space for that in a small firm, and I'm almost feeling like disconnected with you because you're using languaging that I wouldn't use in a small world, or a small firm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got any of that, Allison.
Well, she didn't know it was a small firm until I told her during the interview.
Okay, touche.
Yeah, we were
that's of part of being flexible.
Surprise! You're interviewing a tech attorney firm. Good luck with that.
Sometimes we're working with the job description, sometimes we're not. But Jean wanted to talk about the overqualified question, right?
Yes.
What when you're overqualified? So that's how I qualified the overqualified question.
And that is perfect because, again, you were saying a lot of things about that. I could see where I still was left having the experience that you were overqualified because it was such a top-down, big-picture thing. The first words out of my mouth, like your words were, it is a very valid concern. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should be worried about hiring her for this job. And instead of starting with, it's a very valid concern, you could say, gosh, I've always wanted to work in a small firm. In fact, the very first firm I ever worked at was in a small firm, and I'm still very good friends with that managing partner because I love the camaraderie there, and have that be the lead-in piece rather than, oh yeah, that is a valid concern. You should be worried. I'm not leaving you. Just as a thought.
And for that question in particular, what I loved that you did, because you know you were talking about big firm stuff, and then when we got to the overqualified question or there were a small firm, you immediately created a familiarity by talking about your family's small business.
Yeah, that was great.
And I love the way that you immediately related in that way to say, no, I get it. Like, I totally understand what that looks like. So I agree that the, you know, maybe not validating the concern, but definitely talking about how you understand and putting yourself in their shoes. You did a great job of saying, I relate.
Yeah, and what was interesting for me in the weakness thing that you voluntarily offered, and I'm a huge advocate of that. I think it's a wonderful idea to sometimes proactively interview and anticipate their concerns and to throw in a potential weakness. But what was fascinating is you started off with a grave weakness. My grave weakness is, and so I circled and starred that and made a note.
It is Halloween.
Yes, it is. I know. I was laughing about that. I was like, you don't want to scare them away. But about the grave weakness thing, one technique that I teach people when they're talking about a weakness, instead of making it significant and making it a big deal, like, oh my gosh, it's this big grave weakness, use the word could. You know, it could be considered a weakness. Some people could see this as a weakness because of X, Y, and Z. However, other people could see it as a positive. Because I think there was so much emphasis on how it definitively was a weakness for you, and it's something that's awful and horrible, and it wasn't that level of drama, but I'm just exacerbating it for the purposes of this debrief. It's you don't realize how something like that can all of a sudden hold out significance, especially if we make something significant in an interview. It automatically becomes more significant to the interviewer or employer.
And I think that the weakness question is, it's really important to end the answer to the weakness question with how you're working towards, how you've already started to improve it, and how you'll continue to work on it. So that's what I always think is a good example for the weakness question, is something you're aware of, you're actively participating in changing it, and now you're talking about how you'll continue to do better.
Yes, I know you gave me the gift of actually giving me the follow-up question, which was a gift. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and another interesting thing too, you had a really lengthy list of resources, which in many cases is great. But it's almost like when a job seeker, when I ask them, why should I want to hire you? And people give me a laundry list. I'm hardworking, detail-oriented, da-da-da-da-da. That was my experience of when we said, well, what are your resources? And you had this long list. But what was interesting is, Allison, I would love your 2 cents on this. Had you only listed one or two resources and talked about where that resource had provided a solution that had increased productivity, efficiency, or performance, I think that might have been way more impactful because, yes, I have in my mind's eye now, Gene has a lot of resources, and what would it be like if you picked 2 of those and just gave examples of, you know, one of my favorite resources is being part of this ALA organization and the colleagues I get to work with. About 6 months ago when they were changing the ACA law or the sick leave law, I was able to call somebody at the exact same size firm and save the firm several $1,000s in updating our handbook and update it because I had this resource available.
Absolutely. And as I'm looking at your list of resources, the ones that I wrote down, I think that they clearly fall into 3 categories. So it's your professional organizations, online research, and colleagues, people, right?
Yeah, that was good.
So you could say even there's three and I'm able to use them. Here's an example, like Jennifer said, of a way that when this change happened, I used all three and let them complement each other. So that way you're showing how you're using resources and helping them come together. And I felt similar with the successful team member. There were a lot of, you know, a successful team member can look many different ways. It could be this, it could be that. And that was an answer where it was, I started to drift. Yeah. Like it went, that was one that went really long for me. Mm-hmm. But if you painted the picture of the, like, think of, you've got like two people that you love, right? Like for me, but like my husband jokes with me because every time I talk about Francis, one of my team members, I touch my hand to my heart. And he'll say, well, Francis, what did Francis? But it's because he was such an amazing member of my team. He stepped up at a pivotal moment when I needed him. And I'm still, I mean, he reported to me 15 years ago and I still use a reference. He still uses me as a reference. So think of who's your Francis and talk about how they're a successful member of your team, or, you know, two or three, because I'm certain that those people are right at the tip of your tongue. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to talk about them.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's very helpful feedback. And interestingly enough, I have notes. You guys should see my handwriting. It is absolutely atrocious. It's like bird scratch all over the paper, and I can't even read my own words. But what was interesting, another thing that you started with, is when we were talking about a little bit about your history and your career, there were two points. One, you said, I'm always transitioning to a new role. For me, that was an alarm. It was like, uh-oh, what does that mean? And it's ironic because if you were to look at Jean's resume, she has phenomenal longevity, probably better longevity than 99% of job seekers out there. But the minute you say that key word out there, oh, I'm always transitioning into a new role or always looking to transition, for me as an employer, that kind of goes, ooh, gives me bristly, you know, scares me a little bit. Another thing that you could play with is when you did the opening part, you said, you know, I started as a paralegal and I moved here and there. You might want to address why you left your other firm after so many years, because when you've been at a place as long as you were, rather than being on the defensive where they're like, well, why did you leave after all these years and what have you been doing, which I think was Allison's next follow-up question, is are you currently working? It's more fun and more effortless to be on the offensive than the defensive. So if you want to be the one to bring that up and say, gosh, no, I've been in legal over the last 20 years. I started off and got my degree here and then practiced as a paralegal, which really gave me a solid foundation of understanding the law and how it worked, and eventually worked my way up into management. And I spent over, you know, 15 plus years with the same company until they got acquired and went through some changes and then restructured their management team. And since then, I've been able to consult and figure out what direction I want to go next and what size firm I want to work at and where I can synthesize all this knowledge. Mm-hmm.
Can you write that down? I'm just going
to
write that down.
If I had a nickel, that's why I offer the podcast, people. You can go back and listen to it. Thank God, right?
Yeah. I'm just going to sit there and transcribe that.
Okay. That is available to you. Okay, in just about 20 minutes, you'll be able to hear that. That is a great point about the tell me about yourself. And the tell me about yourself, the first things that you mentioned were the flexibility and growth. And what I was thinking when you did that is I was thinking on a resume, the difference between an objective and a summary. And I think the objective is when you're saying, these are all the things I want, can you give them to me? And then a summary is saying, these are all the things I bring to you. And so I think the firm or the hiring manager knows what they're giving to you, so I would start by sharing what you're bringing to them. So this is the experience I have, these are my top skills. I think you created a camaraderie right away and an ease of interviewing with your humor and just the way you approach things was very, very easy. But I think that there was a missed opportunity in starting to talk about the job offers, the flexibility and the growth that I want, because we don't want We want you to start to talk about what value you bring immediately.
Yeah, and that ties in. I was trying to find my notes and my chicken scratch of what I had written down about humor. This is why I use my iPhone for every single note I take normally. But there was something you had said about humor, I remember, and Allison had said, well, it sounds like you use humor a lot. And the way that you answered that question, I think could have left an employer a little bit of pause, because yes, humor can be a good thing, but I believe the way that you responded was a little bit of, well, yeah, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So for me, I was like, uh-oh, well, does this mean her sense of humor is going to throw off my team? Mm-hmm. And instead, you might want to approach it and say, you know, I found that by bringing levity to the situation and, you know, learning my colleagues and, you know, how to just keep things light, it really helps dissipate the tension in the office when you have these attorneys who are working, you know, 100 plus hours a week. And so throwing in the occasional levity, I found actually helps the situation by throwing in a joke rather than saying, well, some people like my humor and some people don't, and which could rub an employer the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and make them think that you don't know when to use it.
Yeah.
And I think you do. The other thing that I think is an opportunity is your friend asked you to do this talk in Brazil.
Yes.
But it wasn't like she was just asking anybody.
Ah,
so
brilliant.
What did she see in you? Like, why didn't she ask me? Good reason, right? I'm not the expert. I wouldn't be the qualified person to do that talk in Brazil. But your friend wasn't saying like, hey, anybody want to go to Brazil? Your friend identified you as a subject matter expert and a person that she would want to sponsor in whatever way she did to send you to Brazil to give this information to these people that really needed it.
Oh, that's brilliant, Allison. Yep. And I didn't even catch that. You're so right. Because it's one thing to say, oh, my friend invited me, versus, you know, I have a colleague, which she is a colleague. Mm-hmm. You know, I have this colleague who had a relationship in Brazil and they needed people to come and speak about what it's like to practice law in the United States. And that's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And it's all about kind of reframing, like what Allison just said. That's brilliant.
Yeah, she identified you as someone who could relate to the group, who was a great speaker. So, like, those are ways that you can use her voice to toot your horn. A little bit. Like, she thought I was fantastic for all these reasons, and she invited me, and I was so proud. So now you go back to the proud accomplishment. You are so proud that you were able to deliver, you know, exactly what she wanted you to in this international forum.
Yeah, and I would even use the word colleague instead of friends, mm-hmm. because most of my colleagues are friends and vice versa, but the word colleague has a lot more clout than the word friend.
Mm-hmm. Or what was her title? Yeah. Right? The director of speaking engagements for, you know, our Brazilian relationship.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the last thing I was going to say, it's for me, language is critical. And I know Gene and I, we talk a lot about this offline, about how important language is. One fascinating thing that came up at least 20 times in the interview was the word try. Go back and listen to this and just circle every time or make a little mark every time you use the word try. And for any of our listeners out there, I really encourage each of you to look at your speaking and your languaging and notice where we use words like try, hope, should, etc., and replace those words with empowering language. I am, I will, I can, I'm doing. All that languaging, even in shifting it in your speaking, is going to A, retrain your brain to be in line with the actions you're committed to taking, and is going to have an entirely different impact. If you go back and listen to this mock interview, Gene, and replace the word try with I am, or I have, or I will, and just notice the difference it makes in the interview.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And I that brings up for me, when I'm working with people on their elevator pitch or the tell me about yourself, the three things I always say, and this might be an opportunity as you're looking at the tries or languaging, is I want your answers to be clear, concise, and in control.
Yeah.
So we all have circumstances that brought us to this place that we're job searching, right? Layoffs and moves and life, right? But you're here and you own it. And this isn't just for you, but in general, like
any of
it's
our
not,
listeners.
Yeah, it's not trying. It's you know, I am in control of this and I am moving forward. I've made this.
It's intentional speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
absolutely. Now I know exactly what you're saying. Well, if you notice, I did hear myself say hope, and I tried to change that. I went from hopefully to ideally. So
yes.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and so it's just bringing a little bit of play and fun. And Gene, you were amazing. I mean, that was great. You're so articulate, because sometimes I find people really fumble over their words and they have a hard time articulating things. I feel like that's not where you need to work. It's more in just being concise and to the point and giving specific examples. If you play with those few things, you're going to ace every interview you walk into.
Mm-hmm. And stick with that. What is the best way for me to earn your trust? over the next
90
days.
Oh, God, that was genius, Jean. And to any managers out there, to any people looking at jobs, that's just such a great question on either side of the table that you could ask is, like, what does it take for you to trust somebody? You could even ask that question in an interview. But I love the way you phrased it to the employer. I think that was brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. These, as I mentioned before we went on air, I think these provide such value both to the interviewee and to our listeners. So thank you for being here.
Well, this is a wonderful experience. I can't thank you both enough. This is great experience for me. This is just fantastic.
Well, Jean, we're so happy to have had you on the show. And again, tune in later in the month when Allison is going to be guest hosting. I believe it's on the 17th and the 24th for us as well. Happy Halloween, everybody. And next week, I will actually be having, this is kind of funny, my husband, Ian, it's his birthday week, and he has been asking to be a guest on the show. And he is probably one of the most brilliant managers I've ever worked with in my life. He helped take a company from zero to 100 million, and then that company sold 3 times. And so we're going to be talking about how do you bounce back after you've been fired. And actually, we're going to be talking about politics in the workplace, how it can actually be detrimental to you, as well as the right, what was it you said earlier, Jean? Something about the right person having the job. I loved what you had said earlier.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, it's all right. So about sometimes how, the most popular person isn't the right person for the job. I love that. And so since it'll be the day before the election, we're going to play with that a little bit. And don't forget, in case you missed the show live, you can always find us on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. That's also the name of my blog that you can find with over 200 complimentary articles. And have a absolutely wonderful and safe Halloween, everybody, and a happy Monday.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.